Live from the Pathway Studios in Johnston proper, you are Live from the Path.
And you're listening to Live from the Path, coming from the Pathway Studios here in Johnston proper. Boomer, you up like walking around?
Yeah, I felt like going for a stroll, man.
This is a static program.
No.
You're not allowed to just walk about.
That's what we've been doing, but I switched it up one week, and I don't think I liked it, so I'm going to not do that again.
All right, here's the deal. Here's what we're going to do. An attempt to keep moving a seat. Here's where we're going on the show this week. So I was reading on, there was an article on from the Telegraph. It's a UK newspaper. And there was a guy saying that someone who was on record as believing that the Earth is flat would be an unlikely anchor of the BBC's flagship breakfast news show. A news reporter who denied basic facts from the past, such as the French Revolution, the explosion of Mount Vesuvius, or the Holocaust, would surely raise eyebrows at interview. Climate change denial or denial of heliocentrism would unlikely to find favor at the BBC, and yet they have just selected a creationist to front their breakfast show. And so this guy's basically leading the charge that says if you believe in creationism, you shouldn't be allowed to tell the news because of your beliefs. It reflects an ignorance of the world around you, and you shouldn't be trusted. So we're going to delve into that article a little bit. I'm not much of a – I don't know. This stuff like this like generally doesn't bother me, but I read that article and I thought, well, I suppose you should just anticipate that, that's a natural consequence of what people think and know the right way to react to it. So we'll kind of talk about that. Also, there was a video going around – about Christian phrases, like weird people who weren't Christians trying to understand certain Christian phrases. Like if you say, what is it, washed by the blood, how does that strike a guy who didn't grow up in the church? Because, I mean, it sounds creepy now that, like, if you pull it out of context.
Yeah.
Anyway, there was a few of those on the video that were pretty interesting, and I was wondering, I had a couple that popped into my mind even as we were talking about that, so we'll talk a little bit through some of those things. We also have advice on Dear Life from the Path, and so there was this thing that came up that Herrick found a few weeks ago, and Dave, you could probably do a better job of explaining it than me, but it has to do with basically the gamification of social profiling. Is that the right way to talk about it?
Sure, yeah.
Okay, so... but it's in, where was it, China, Japan?
Yeah, it's in China. It's taken place in China, and it's it seems like it's being endorsed by the Chinese government. It's developed by one of their big software giants. I mean, these are the guys who own Alibaba, which doesn't mean a lot to American audiences, but imagine eBay and Amazon and like all your biggest outlets online getting together, and they're covering distribution, online distribution to everyone in Asia. That's essentially what you're talking about. This is a company that owns like Blizzard and Activision and things like that. And so what they're doing is they're kind of looking into their social media presence and giving them just kind of an overall evaluative score of what kind of citizen you are. So doing things along the lines of, hey, we like our Chinese government, and here's some of the awesome things about why we like being Chinese, then, you know, your score goes up. On the other hand, if you're posting, like, pictures of maybe Tiananmen Square or maybe things that might cast Chinese culture or even the existing Chinese government in kind of a negative light, then... you're going to get a lower score to this. And so to some extent, it's very similar to like our credit score in terms of just how we're handling our money, except they're looking more at how are you handling your social media and your online presence. And so, I mean, already it kind of smacks of, hey, is Big Brother watching me? And yes, of course it is. I mean, that's exactly right. What they're doing. And not only are they watching you, they're not just giving targeted ads, but they're also giving feedback so that the government can kind of evaluate what kind of a person you are. And it seems like it's set to become a required thing for some of these other things like online shopping and that sort of thing. And it might be something that prospective employers might be checking into as well to see what kind of good citizen you are. So, you know, all those big brother-ish fears that are going on are kind of playing into this sort of deal. And so where it really starts to get nasty is this Sesame Credit thing will also let you know about your friends and your contacts, the people who are on your friends list. And it will let you know what kind of score they have, and their score contributes to yours. So if you have a friend who seems to be presenting a lot of disseminating information and, hey, you know, I disagree with the government type of stuff, they've got a low score. It's letting you know that you're getting a low score because of this friend. And so all of a sudden now you've got this kind of pressure to perhaps unfriend these guys, but instead friend people who are very pro-government.
Oh, wait, you ditch the dude and then your score goes up?
Yep.
Right, yeah.
Dang.
So imagine that that sort of thing is built into your Facebook profile, is that the government and corporate systems are looking at what kind of person you are in evaluating you, and not just you personally, but also the people that you associate with online. And giving you an overall score, and perhaps down the road, opening up or closing possibilities in your in real life, based on this kind of score.
So you're saying I can't get a mortgage if I'm friends with Boova?
At this point, not an issue, but it seems like it's opening the door for that exact scenario.
Dang it, Boova!
Sorry, buddy.
Yeah. Well, you are who you are. I hear you. Hold on. I got. I'll show you a little bit of this video, or the description of this thing. Hold on. Check this out.
One of you recently brought this to our attention, and when we first started looking into it, we couldn't believe it. Even now, looking at this, I keep thinking that there's gotta be something about this that I just don't understand. Like, I must be reading this wrong. It's just so clearly something out of dystopian science fiction, and yet, here it is in our world, and people are actually embracing it. Apparently, China has gamified being an obedient citizen. Going under the innocuous name of Sesame Credit, China has created a score for how good a citizen you are. And that's one of the scariest things I've heard in quite a while. It's jointly run by Tencent. Yes, that Tencent, the one that owns Riot Games and has a significant share in Epic and Activision Blizzard. And also the ascendant Chinese competitor to Amazon, Alibaba, hence the name Sesame. So the owners of China's largest social networks have partnered with the government to create something akin to the U.S. credit score. But instead of measuring how regularly you pay your bills, it measures how obediently you follow the party line. They dredge data from your social network, so if you post pictures of Tiananmen Square or share a link about the recent stock market collapse, your Sesame credit score goes down. Share a link from the state-sponsored news agency about how good the economy's doing, and your score goes up. But Alibaba and Tencent are also the largest online retailers in China, so Sesame Credit is also able to pull data from your purchases. If you're making purchases the state deems valuable, like work shoes or local agricultural products, your score goes up. If you import anime from Japan, though, down the score goes. And this score has real-world consequences. Like many games, Sesame Credit has tiers and levels, and having a high score gives you special benefits, like making it easier to get the paperwork you need to travel, or making it easier to get a loan. Now, currently, there are no consequences for having a low score, but there's been talk about implementing penalties once the system becomes mandatory in 2020. Penalties like slower internet speeds for low-scoring citizens,
or
even restricting the jobs that a low-scoring person's allowed to hold. But there's one more layer to Sesame Credit, and here's where this goes from being repulsive to downright insidious. Because this is all part of a social network, it also scans your friends. So you will lose points for having friends with low obedience scores. And it tells you this. At any point, anybody can check anyone else's score. And when you check your own score, Sesame Credit provides a handy map of your friends to show you who's dragging your score down. Have you ever had that thing where you play a game with somebody who wasn't doing very well, and you've tried to change their behavior to make them do better? Or maybe after a while, you just sort of stopped playing with the people who were holding you back? That's at the heart of how this system works. And it's also what makes this one of the most terrifying tools of authoritarian oppression I've ever read about. Because, like, mass censorship, jail time, assassinations, those are all big, messy implements for keeping a population in line. That messiness and severity foster resentment, eventually rebellion. They're expensive, they're unwieldy. In the end, those tools are impossible to maintain. But social pressure? Ostracization? Those things are free. They happen on their own. And as a government tool, they don't have nearly the same potential for going embarrassingly, disastrously wrong. With a system like this in place, a government doesn't even have to tell neighbor to spy on neighbor, to rat each other out. Because that's all built into a seemingly innocuous game system. The government need not step in. Re-education will be handled for them by friends, classmates.
Boy, that is kind of creepy.
Yeah.
I feel like if I scan the net, this is the type of stuff that shows up. How did you come across this, Herrick?
I actually follow the channel. Extra Credits usually just follows games and looks at game design and even just some of the storytelling involved in it and some of the mechanics and whatnot. But
yeah,
when they came across this and, you know, did an article on that, they had earlier done one on gamification in educational systems and how, you know, teachers and educators can use games as a way of helping students to learn because, you know, one of the very first things a game has to do is teach everyone the rules.
Right.
And so, you know, game developers have to become almost experts at education in order to accomplish that goal of just even presenting a game.
Right.
And so now they were looking at gamification in a deeper way and found that this was apparently in place in China's social media. And it just... thinking through some of the implications of that just sounded awful. And, you know, he's highlighting exactly what's going on with that.
Boy, that is kind of creepy, fellas. Like, so what would your reaction be? Buva, let's say you found out this thing was going on in the U.S. Would you bail off the social media and stop shopping Amazon?
Absolutely. I think that that they call that one of the biggest problems with it is the fact that it causes a negative social pressure upon friends and family members. Like, if you're thinking to someone that would honestly care enough about this, and obviously there are real world problems with it, like it said, the penalties and then slower internet speeds, which I can imagine would be a problem for Americans, or the not being able to hold a job. Like, I can see people honestly going on and no longer connecting with good friends because they don't have a high enough score. And I can see people having a huge problem with, like, not actually being a part, connecting with family and things like that. If this became an American-based system, yeah, I would absolutely bail.
Boy, think of what it causes you to do. And it's just a bit of thin in the herd, I guess. But it asks you to put value on things. Like, what do I value more? Do I get this good job, but I got to cut ties with Buva because he's a low-rent slaggard who hates the government?
Right.
And so, or I say, I love that slaggard, and I'm willing to mop floors for it. I mean, it really puts the stuff to it. Like, ignore the government domination creep in this part, and just think of, like, what it causes you to actually call out your priorities and say, what am I willing to pay for? Is it okay that it costs me to maintain these relationships? That's got a real Christian whiff to it, really. Mm-hmm. I mean, on the other side of it, but I don't know. I mean, that real creeps me out. I don't know. I mean, do people not realize they're buying into this thing, or do they just not? Is a bit of a sheeple society, and that's just what's going to happen.
They don't realize they're buying into this thing, right? Like, sometimes it's a little bit unfair in the West. We characterize anybody who's foreigner as two notches below our intellect level. You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah.
But like as a society, Chinese people are pretty sharp, and they have to know exactly what's going on. And like, I think I slightly disagree with what they're saying. I mean, agree that the more physical, tyrannical affront, it produces rebellion faster. But like this type of tyrannical social media usage, it's gonna produce a rebellion. It's just gonna take a while. That's all. Like, I don't know how long that they would put up with that. Like, by the time, you know, you're gonna basically say what friends I can keep, otherwise I can't get a loan now. Because what's the end game here, right? Well, let's say 10 years from now, what do you got? You got a bunch of elitist China people who are playing the game, right? They're not actually true harbors of the Chinese government. They just know how to win. And so, you know, they make it look like they got rid of a bunch of friends. They get the fast internet. They get the good loan. And then you have everybody else who now can't thrive or do business at all. Like, that's got to be a ding to the economy by the time it's all said and done.
No, to some extent, they're already there. It's those who are members of the party already have special privileges. Those who are part of the Communist Party of China.
Is this going to make any real difference then?
It will help to kind of give them an idea of what's going on outside of the party. For everyone else who isn't a direct member of the party, it'll help to give the government more of an evaluative ability and a way of incentivizing people to be even more pro-government.
But it's not even a real incentive, right? Like, it's a bait and switch. Like, if I can see that from here, they can certainly see it from there.
Yeah, but, I mean, they're already in a system that gives some kind of games and incentives and whatnot for living life in a certain way as opposed to another. So some of that's just...
Like our tax system.
Yeah, in a lot of ways. Our tax system incentivizes you to live one way versus another. Yeah.
Hmm.
One of the other things that, as I was thinking about it, it seemed a little bit, just slightly less sinister was the fact that... For us in the West, we very much value our diversity and our innovation and just being able to stand apart from the crowd and say, hey, I'm different. I have a unique new idea. Whereas the further east you go, you tend more towards communally oriented instead of individualistically oriented cultures. So a greater value to people as they tend to live farther east on the planet is that they tend to look more in terms of how am I fitting in with my community. And personal identification with community seems to be a bigger deal. So something like this gives them a very meaningful score in terms of, hey my goal in life is to be a good citizen. Mm. And right. This helps them as a tool. It's a value to them. Just like our credit score system is a value to us. And it might be something that's very reprehensible to people who look at greed as something that's awful. And have never really looked at that objectively and saying, hey, why do we have a credit score if greed is such an awful thing? Well, it's part of the system because it reflects our values, and being able to get that kind of meaningful feedback on what I value is important. And for them, culture, community, being able to identify and say, hey, I'm part of my brothers. I'm with the group, my family. That's a meaningful thing for them.
No, that's true. I suppose that if your value is in being part of the community, it doesn't seem like if someone is outside of the community, they bear responsibility for that. And the impact of the community is not to try to drag him up. It's to otherwise solidify the community by letting that guy go and being outside of that's what he intends to do. If he's being a boova about stuff, you leave him there because he's harming everybody and being selfish about it. And you may, that inspires you to cut ties with him. Whereas we might say, he's an individual, help a man up. Mm-hmm. They might say, cut him off. He's harming the collective.
And it's not necessarily either you cut him off or help him up. You could, most likely they're going to try and help someone up. That's generally the first course.
But
yeah. If someone's just absolutely stubborn and seems like they're very contrary to the way that the family is going,
then that sounds like boo-boo.
Yeah, they're likely to just cut them off. And say, hey, but you know, obviously everyone's going to have their own kind of determination as to what it means to be part of the family or not.
Okay, so boo is still bringing everybody down. That's what
I was going to say. Am I the social antagonist in this entire story?
Yeah.
Okay. Just checking.
Yeah. I mean, for purposes of how I explain it, yeah. That makes my life easier if you're the slaggard.
I'm all right with that.
I don't think that's a legit word. All right. Well, Creepo, here's the deal. That wouldn't fly here. We value different things. Mm-hmm. So it's interesting, I suppose, to think about like where it's not fair, and I think this is part of what Dave was saying, is it's not fair to look at it from our perspective and what we value. It's less nefarious. Still, I don't think it's less insidious, really, because like the aim is still not a positive aim.
But I mean, all this stuff is out in the open. Like, it's not even like it's backhanded secret society type deals. Like, everybody knows it's happening.
That's true. Yeah. What are you going to do, I guess? Michael, let me ask you this question. What if they said, how much would they have to tax your internet before you said, screw it, I'm leaving this country, I don't like it? Like,
leaving the country?
Yeah, so let's say, hey, it's a 100 bones internet tax, Mike.
I'd just get rid of it. I mean, I would figure out how to do life without it before I bent into the, you know what I'm saying, before I switched governments.
What if they said $5,000 United States tax every year, extra tax directly on you?
Yeah, I don't know. I still think I'd probably stay.
Probably figure it out, right? So, I mean, that's probably the question is like, well, it's an insidious deal. They're trying to...
Well, I don't know. See, now what comes with that is like the benefit of living in the United States is currently there's not a government that charges me a $5,000 United States tax and puts the screws to me on the internet usage. And so it's more like the results of a government that's willing to do those kind of things. And so maybe I would change my ways as soon as they start taxing me an outrageous amount for no apparent reason. And then trying to take away my freedom of the internet, then I suppose maybe I would consider taking a trip.
Yeah, but let's
to
say
Venezuela.
like me and Boova and Gessman and Herrick are willing to pay the deal, and now you're out kind of on your limb. Where are you going to go? You move to Bolivia or somewhere on your own on some principle, stand on it, and then you're off by yourself.
Well, I mean,
everyone else just accepted the tax.
I haven't had a chance to weigh my options because this thing's just been brought upon me right now. I mean, I'm certain after some investigation I could come up with the correct answer.
I guess you're trying to use a perspective that says here's something that you value, or like what would it take for you to actually separate from the communality of your society if the rest of the principles don't change, but you're just kind of accede to these small things. And I think insidiously pointing to overtaking you on big things or mass influence of folks. But in either case, like if everybody in the room was willing to eat a $5,000 tax, like – what kind of stones would it take for you to say, I'm just not going to do this. I'm willing to move away from everything I've ever known and from the people that I know and love because of this tax? Like, how
if they forced communal living, I would leave.
If they said you have to live with other people?
Yes. Yeah, if they said, look, we built subdivisions for you. Everyone's going to live in these subdivisions. You know, you still got to pay us for the house, but we're going to pick where you live and that kind of thing. I would probably bail after that.
Okay, government housing, you're gone.
Yeah.
Where are you going to go to?
I haven't quite thought of that yet. Once again, this thing has just been thrust upon me here.
Harris, you've been around the world. Where would you go to if you couldn't live here? And I'm not even implying that you want to live here, but like, where would you go live anywhere? Where would you live?
My general rule is just find the darkest place on earth and go live there.
Like it doesn't get much sun, or do you mean spiritual?
I was going to say, so Alaska?
Darkness,
okay.
Yeah.
I like a pale people. If you could find me a pale group of Aborigines, I'll live with them.
Go live with the Inuits.
Okay.
So that led me to Central Iowa. So.
Actually, I remember that.
Hey, gentlemen, that led him to this room.
Herrick and I were having that conversation about, this has been a few years ago, about all the places that he's been. And we're talking about the being able to impact spiritual darkness. And a lot of times the United States is trying to send missionaries out, and missionaries are trying to head back in because of all the spiritual darkness that's here, and we're just blind to it. And we're like, we need to help the world, as opposed to the world's sending folk. There's somebody in Bolivia saying, we send people to the United States. We bring light into darkness.
I think if I remember right, the first time that Herrick was on this show, we couldn't even reveal his identity. Like, he was off camera. Man, that had been 5 years ago, maybe.
Yeah, I think I was going by Moon Man.
The Moon Man. I had called him Moon Man.
Yeah. And like, due to where he was doing mission work and whatnot. And actually, to be honest with you, I never understood why. I wasn't really paying attention, and I didn't know Herrick, and I just thought he was a little creepy. And so I thought, Moon Man, I don't get it.
Here's the thing, is not only was for his protection, but because we didn't have him on camera, all he was wearing was a pair of boxies.
Yeah,
he had a pair of boxer shorts, and that was it.
That was quite the scene.
Yeah, that's what he, you know. He's
you
from,
guys don't give me a cool name every time I do that.
No, we speak about you. It's just not in things that we say in the open.
Oh, okay.
We wait until you leave. All right, you're listening to Live from the Path. Don't move to China and gamify your life.
That can't hold up. That society cannot hold up.
Don't you think they already? I mean, here in the U.S., some of that stuff is already taking place. It's just for different purposes, more of a marketing standpoint, trying to sell you stuff.
Yeah, you're talking informative Google
thing.
AdWords and that kind of jazz, or
yeah.
No,
like,
that's,
I mean,
that's
every
true.
I mean, you're already being monitored. It's just, I guess, different purposes.
Yeah, I was going to say the monitoring is already happening. I would be interested to see the incentivizing happening, and then them taking it from a corporate perspective for like selling and buying things to obedience to the government.
Here's the deal. You're going to eventually run out. You're going to threaten someone with like jobs and stuff or money. If banks make money when they loan money and businesses need workers, at some point you're going to disenfranchise a too large group of people and no one's going to work at your place.
But I mean, actually, didn't Herrick make a solid point though, right? Like, look what China's trying to get it for. It's for a community. They're pushing towards a more connected and cohesive community, and we're using the exact same technology to try to get more money, right?
So you crap.
Yeah. So actually, Josh brings a decent point to the table. We're actually doing the exact same thing. They're worshiping their god, and we're worshiping ours.
Yeah, right.
And that's how we're rolling.
For us, it's money and influence. So, I mean, one of the incentives for having more money is banks will give you a loan at a better rate because they know that, you know, you're more likely to pay it off. And they give you a better credit score and say, hey, you apparently have a stable income and you've got a large pile of money. We know it's going to come back, so we can give you a loan for a better rate. And, you know, being rich opens doors for them. So that's just our country. We worship greed.
Boy, that's tricky. Indicting. All right. Anyway, you listen to Life from the Path. So there was an article on, like you said, from the Telegraph in the United Kingdom. And the basic deal is is that this guy's upset that they've just selected a creationist to front the breakfast show at the BBC. He says, of course, in a free society, the margin of respect and tolerance given to religious beliefs should be generous. As a Christian, I hope society continues to protect my right to hold beliefs and to express them. But that margin cannot cover disregard for well-established scientific fact in a job where fact is key. And while I have no doubt that Dan Walker is, in every other respect, entirely qualified for his role as a presenter of the BBC's morning news show, his appearance on BBC One and BBC News as the creationist face of the corporation to millions is problematic. A belief that the Earth is between 6 and 10,000 years old and that presumably God planted dinosaur skeletons on the ground to give us all something to talk about goes well beyond the values for which people of faith can demand respect. The only difference between creationism and a church you could set up tomorrow which believes China doesn't actually exist is that creationism has been around for a longer period of time. Sexism, too, is quite a vintage, but we do not accord it respect for being old. Creationism doesn't just deny Darwinian evolution, it denies the findings of astronomy and chemistry, the age of the universe, the scientific consensus that underpins carbon dating, and ice core samples over 500,000 years old. There are a few aspects of basic science that aren't directly or indirectly challenged by the logical implications of creationism. Indeed, creationism is so silly that the government has defunded schools which teach it. They are not eligible for taxpayer support because they are promulgating an unscientific myth. Of course, science does not hold all the answers, but is generally believed to provide some of them. To believe that God literally created the earth in 6 days is to deny basic elements of logic. It may not be as offensive or insensitive as Holocaust denial, but it is as logically indefensible. The BBC's mission to inform, educate, and entertain requires it to ensure that it handles news with impartiality, objectivity, and reason. So, I feel like this is something that some kind of wacky Christian guy might have said 15 years ago, and I would have labeled him as a wacky Christian guy. But it seems like it's a relevant thing. This is a prime newspaper in London talking about how you should deny a man a job because of his, for practical purposes, let's just call him biblically centered beliefs on creation. Mm-hmm. So what's the right reaction here? Like in a free society where Christian beliefs are less and less, pervasive. Doesn't this seem like a natural contention?
He's the host?
Yeah, he's like an anchor.
Yeah.
Okay, so I mean, it's not like I never understood this. I think they've trumped up journalism. I don't know exactly what journalism is these days, but it seems to me you got a roving field reporters that are going out getting information, and then a guy that basically reads copy. And so, if you're saying that any belief this man holds would disqualify him from reading a teleprompter and or piece of paper / iPad. I mean, I feel like you're giving this thing a little too much weight. Like, it's not like he's going out personally to Belize and getting the news story of the day, or he covered the latest terrorist threat somewhere in the world. Someone's delivering the stuff to him, and he's just reading the words. And so I don't know what type of background you'd have to have that disqualifies you from being able to read something off of a screen.
Mike says he has no influence on the news. He just reads.
But tell me that's not the truth.
So if that's the case, we shouldn't be concerned.
I think the guy's getting at this guy. The author of this article is getting at the position of anchor is a little bit more than just a talking head. That, you know, he's the public face, among other things, but he's also kind of the final word in terms of what is being presented.
Yeah, he decides what goes on the air.
He's the public face that reads the teleprompter.
I think he also decides what goes on the air. Like, that's what a Dan Rather or a Brian Williams would do. That's what was the big deal when Brian Williams, had fabricated some of those stories. It's like, he's not only the guy reading the news, but he's also the director. He decides what news gets talked about. Yeah. He may not have written all the copy, but like, he's the editor.
He does a lot more. Exactly. He's the editor. He, in the whole production throughout the day, he's the one who makes a lot of the final decisions. And then at the end of the day, when it's being broadcast, he's the one who's actually speaking the words. So he might have someone else writing the thing, but he chooses what, and he's the one who ultimately gets to sign off and say, yeah, this is what's going on, depending exactly on how the corporation is doing that sort of thing. But yeah, he does carry a little bit of weight in terms of what he's bringing to the table.
I don't know any of that.
Okay. Well, let's just assume that that's the case for now.
I don't know. I liked it better when I assumed the other way. Okay. He doesn't really have to know anything.
Well, if that's the case, then yeah, the author is just getting hot and bothered over nothing.
Yeah, see,
it is just a talking head.
But he's an editor, Mike.
Right, so if he's an editor, he's actually the guy making decisions and directing the thing, then it does carry more significance what his beliefs are. But the question is, should someone having different beliefs than the population at large discount them from being able to run a news corporation?
Yeah, like, wouldn't that exclude any Jewish people?
I think it would exclude most of Fox, but, you know, that's just my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, like, basic pointing out a Jewish guy, but, like, they're not a dominant religion.
Right.
They believe things that other people don't believe. Wouldn't it be able to say, no, you can't have a Jewish guy work here, or he can't read copy on the news because what? Because he believes things that are different from other people?
See, these are weird distinctions, though, because, like, what level of the population has actually looked into, researched, found out what they actually believe, right? They just get... they get fed a thing, and then they buy onto the train, and then they're just on it, and they're like, why do you believe in global warming? Well, people told me, and I feel like one scientist said that was the deal. Okay, well, I guess that's the deal. You know what I'm saying? The same is true with creationism, and anybody who believes most of scientific theory, they heard one thing, said, yeah, that sounds good, and then off they went. It's not like they personally put their stake on it or had any hand in the pie or anything, right? They just basically agreed with what something else said and did no research into it to figure the validity of the first claim.
This is a weird place to put to hinge on, like creation specifically. I think there's other scientific beliefs you might be able to have a much more substantive argument about. Because the truth is like you can't call creationism. You can't say the opposite is fact. You simply weren't there, right? Like that's not a verifiable fact. Like there's a logical line of thinking that gets there. Sure. But like it is not a fact because simply nobody witnessed it.
Yeah.
And so like of all the things that you could argue about, the non-repeatable creation event seems like a weird one to stake your claim and say this is fact. Anybody that believes this is stupid, because like of all the contestable things that come forth from Scripture that God had a hand in, I feel like creation is the least leg you have to stand on because you have the least amount of ability to validate it. That wasn't the way it happened.
I think it'd be actually easier to call scientific credibility on a conservative Christian for their belief in the resurrection. That might make a lot more sense to me.
Yeah, that seems a lot easier.
You know, someone's dead for over 3 days. They're dead. That's it.
Yeah. Hmm. Yeah. I think you have a much easier leg to stand on, and maybe that doesn't play as well. Like, hey, if you believe that Christ rose from the dead, you can't read the news.
It doesn't, and so that's why the guy's picking something that's more of the minority opinion, something that people are going to agree with the author little bit more on.
Yeah, Andrew?
What?
What are you sleeping over there? Andrew!
Yes.
Pull it together!
What are your thoughts on this deal?
Just leave the guy alone.
I agree. I think that the author should just leave the anchor alone.
So, but does it not mean, like, something that you believe... in one area, does that not influence how you should be trusted in another? Like, isn't that the case against Bill Clinton? Like, isn't that the whole Christian conservative case against, hey, man, guy's dabbling in extramarital items. He certainly can't be trusted around the country.
Yeah, so it basically boils down to is this guy disagrees with me, so I don't like him. Get someone who does agree with me, because that's what I want to hear from.
Yeah, but didn't the guy claim to be a Christian earlier in the article?
Yeah, but apparently not the same kind of Christian, so he just doesn't like this guy's particular way of being Christian.
Right on. Mm. Okay. Well, I mean, long story short, he just reads copy. I feel like we should just let him do his job and be done with it. I mean, here's the deal. Like, I get news almost every day from, like, a variety of 10 to 20 different people, depending on what I'm listening to, and I never think, this man is not credible. I just think he's reporting what happened. A fact happened in front of him. He said, dear readers, here is the fact. And then I say, thank you for the delivery, and then we move on.
So well, Mike's entire opinions are based upon his degradation of the journalistic integrity of your average news anchor.
Yeah, I mean, it seems really unfair, but it's just how I feel.
In fewer words than that, Mike, I agree. I've never looked into the background of any of the news anchors that have ever given me news.
So hold on, there's a quiz at the end of this article. It says, would you trust a creationist to report the news, yes or no?
Yeah.
We're going to say yes. Everybody in with a yes?
Yes.
Yes.
Is there more than one question?
Like no. We say yes. 51% say yes, 49% said no.
You said it was a quiz, didn't you?
Yeah, we won.
I mean a poll.
49% of people would not trust.
Like a quiz on creationism.
We won the quiz.
49% of people would not trust a person to read the news based solely off of a belief in creationism.
Correct. That's according. Yeah. Now, here's the thing, though, is the people that are drawn to this article are people that are likely to agree or disagree with it strongly or agree with it strongly. And so this doesn't really surprise me, right? The agnostic guy in the middle is just like, eh, this doesn't really bother me.
That
what's
guy
on
didn't
the tube?
Take the quiz.
Yeah. Yeah, we're the guys clinging like, yes, I want my voice to be heard in London.
Well, here's the deal. I'm more agnostic on the question. I don't give a crap whether he's a creationist or not.
I'm glad you clicked yes. We might have saved this guy's job.
Yeah. 51% all the way.
Get the numbers up.
That's are the 51.
That's true. It was probably dead 50-50 before we showed up. We tipped the bill.
Hey, man. We have a lot of power and say in this situation in London.
These editors are weird, though. Like, the way this story is, like, here, I'll show you a picture. Like, all the art is, like, people unloading fake dinosaurs. So, like, here's the whole story. Yeah. Watch, fake dinosaur head. Hold on. More dinosaurs coming off a truck. Like, what is this?
This is him suggesting that the dinosaur evidence was planted by the Lord to have everybody scratch their head. But, I mean, here's the thing. His entire theory of why creationism isn't real is he has, like, six things that he says. But really, the truth is it boils down to the carbon dating, the way we date things, right? If the way we date things doesn't turn out to be right, then nothing that he just said makes any sense at all.
Right. But are you telling me this guy right here in the yellow coat is sent by the Lord?
T-Rex ponytail man?
To plant fake dinosaurs?
Right. This ought to do it, right?
The Lord deals in men with ponytails.
That's why people live so long in the Old Testament. They had time to bury these dinosaurs correctly to freak people out later in life.
Here's the deal. I largely don't, like, I just see a lot of fruit in talking about some of this stuff with people. Like, I get where they're at. But this seems like another, another realm of foolishness. Like this is your sole criteria. You tell me, like, of all the anchors that have ever been on the BBC, like, this is your criteria to say they shouldn't be able to report the news. They could be philanderers. They could be, like, they could believe all kinds of weird stuff. They're voting for Bernie Sanders. Like, I don't know, whatever it is that they do. And, like, you're like,
England?
That's what I'm saying. He's a crazy man.
Wow, this guy is very untrustworthy.
He thinks he can affect our government.
You know there are stipulations in which I would feel the burn. So it's primarily because he's in England. But in either case, like, I don't know what this big deal is to point out. Hold on. Look at this smug guy. Let me get you a picture of him. He looks pretty smug about himself.
The guy that wrote the article?
Yeah. Look at this. Can you see his face?
All I know is he's a man in a...
His name's Rupert?
Well...
There he is right there.
He is from London.
He looks like a real smug Willy.
He looks like he gets his haircut same place Boova does.
I'm going to type this up.
Hey man, that guy doesn't get his haircut
anywhere. I think
our discussion's
moved to more of an ad hominem, but, you know.
I'm just saying he looks smug.
Hey, what's Eric? A barrister?
That's
hey,
not a that's not a false thing.
Oh, wait, how many things
are the ad hominem? Any tweets? That's this guy's.
Hey, is that a follow up?
You're like a barista. I think you're like a barista.
His follow up.
What's a barrister?
A male barista.
That's awesome.
That's awesome. Hey, I'm gonna look.
That guy
up.
That used to be a male barista is a banister.
An ex-barista is a barrister?
Boy, that's rough times. All right, so yeah, he had a follow-up. Rupert Meyer says, creationists hate me because I challenged Dan Walker's appointment. No, I don't hate you. I think you're weird. What, is that a line?
Rear? I think you're a rear?
No, I think that's weird. Oh. He said, young earth creationism such as Dan Walker's is not just a matter of faith, but a deeply controversial doctrine which many Christians find ludicrous. Huh. Anyway.
A barrister is a lawyer.
Well, yeah.
I asked.
Who knows that?
I asked.
No, I got the.
Hey, he might be a barista or an ex-barista, and no one corrected that situation.
No, sorry, I knew that. I wasn't paying attention.
Yeah, a barrister is a lawyer. For those of you who needed an answer from Ben but didn't get it,
I was unnecessarily slandering this picture, and I should have been paying attention to what the show was doing. And Dave Herrick tried to right the ship, and I refused and doubled down on the look on his face and the noise he makes. Like,
So what's next?
Hey, man,
we have people that need help, don't we?
Well, that and I do have those four Christian phrases.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Go ahead.
Yeah,
but what do you got?
Let's hear about that.
All right. So there was a BuzzFeed community video, excuse me, which is not an actually endorsed BuzzFeed video. It's just people can send stuff in on a Christian that he questioned a couple of his friends that are non-Christians on certain Christian phrases and wanted to see what someone who did not have a background in Christianity and in the church thought of these phrases. And so he's got four of them that he went through. I'll tell you a couple of the reactions, but I'll tell you the words first. So the first phrase that they went over was the phrase love offering. Love offering. So who in here knows what that is?
So, I think I do. Who? Anybody have a guess that does it?
Yeah.
Is not
anybody
sure?
Want to give it a shot? Love offering. What do you think that means?
Means we didn't set an amount. You just gotta pump some stuff out.
You gotta give out a love
at your own behest.
Okay. Anybody else?
Yeah, I believe it's when you tithe or give money, but based on love instead of any other incentive.
Okay, fair enough. The reactions of the non-Christians was, this has to be some kind of sexual thing.
Right on.
They heard love offering and went, ooh, that's raunchy.
Okay.
That's a Christian term. We're very confused by that statement.
Tricky, okay.
The Christian in the video explained love offering is when you have someone into your church, like an evangelist or a band or someone who doesn't actually work at your church. If they come in and they perform at your church or they do what they do at your church, you don't actually have any money to pay them, so you pass around the plates to your congregation, you get cash from them, and then you can give them a love offering for their time spent. That was the definition of the Christian in the scenario.
Yeah, that's largely the deal.
Yeah. Okay. The next one was the 1040 window. 1040 window. So we actually talked about this a little bit before the show, because that was one that I didn't know either. Apparently, the 1040 window is a section of the earth between latitude and longitude where most of the people in this window don't know Jesus and have never heard of him. So it's like a missionary term. So people will say, you know, I'm a missionary and I'm going throughout the world, but, you know, I'm specifically going to the 1040 window. And that's like not necessarily an elitist statement, or at least I hope it's not, but it's basically them saying, you know, I'm going into that section of the world where Jesus is least known. So that's where I'm going to be at. And so the general idea of the people who weren't the Christians thought that the 1040 window was the time before church happens when you get a chance to say hello to all your friends and you get to spend time talking to the pastor or the priest or the reverend or whatever he was called was their statement. So they thought the 1040 minute window might have been anywhere from 10 to 40 minutes before church starts when you could socialize.
That was great.
Yeah, exactly. And that's what I thought too. I thought the 1040 window might be like a church structure kind of thing. But the third one they did was washed in the blood. Washed in the blood. And so the reaction of everyone wasn't really an opinion on it. They were just really generally confused. All of them kind of said, hey, that sounds contradictory. Like, blood doesn't wash you. Like, there's no way it can wash you over. That would get you dirtier rather than clean. And I think we all kind of know what washing the blood is.
Does not anyone understand outside of the church a metaphor or a play on words or something?
Well,
an allegory.
I'm certain that they understand
anything
what that
besides
is.
The direct literal interpretation.
Mike's list of literary terms.
Yeah, was it one of those things?
Like a simile,
using like or as.
I mean, here's the thing: no one goes up to the great poets of the 15th century and be like, yeah. Yeah, I don't think so. You know what I'm saying? Like, it seems outrageous, the type of language that
what
we're using.
What light through yonder poser breaks? What's a poser, Shakespeare?
Yeah. Is this a barista?
Does that dude make coffee?
I mean, it just seems you're playing unfairly dumb here.
Well, and that, I don't know. That was just the reactions of the non-Christian in the situation.
I'm telling you, they're causing trouble on purpose.
Well, there you go.
Are they journalists? Did you say
they're anchors, but they don't have that editorial perspective.
Yeah, see?
All they have is news reading.
All right, I think they're just asking questions from people who don't normally go to church and aren't really exposed to our strange idioms that are out there. And so it's like, hey, here are these words. Obviously, the literal definition of these doesn't make a lot of sense. So what would you make of it based on what you're hearing?
Yeah. I guess what I'm saying, if I had never heard the phrase before and someone said, hey, man, you know, what do you think washed in the blood means? I wouldn't say, hey, blood doesn't wash things. That doesn't make any sense at all. Like, I would try to put my 2 cents worth in and think about, well, I mean, it's got to mean something to somebody, so here's my guess. They're not even trying.
Well, you were not one of the people who were asked on this thing, Mike.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, so I don't know, like, what other examples do you have of
idioms?
Yeah.
Like,
so,
we're not on the same page, or it's raining cats and dogs, and things like that. You expose it to someone who's never grown up in an English-speaking environment, and they're thinking, what kind of crazy talk are you doing? And so they need an explanation, otherwise the idiom just doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, or like even ones that in addition to those that you hear in the church, I started to get really bothered by ears to hear. Like, I know where that comes from, but like, you look like you don't understand basic anatomy when you're like, do you have ears to hear? Yes, that's how ears work. Next.
They are on my face.
Right, like that sounds silly. Or like, what would just pop in my mind? Oh, when people say, hey, lift holy hands. I'm like, what is the holy hands? Like, where did I pick them up at the door? Like, and so I suppose there's just things like that where, you know, you say things And it, because people are in a culture, they recognize them. But like, if that's your first time there, you know, you really don't have any idea what's going on. And frankly, the things that they're saying sound a little weird.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And some churches do a better job of kind of cleaning up the vocabulary, making it a little more accessible. Other churches, you know, they tend to hang around themselves for the most part, and it just kind of becomes part of their culture, and this is what they say. So, you know, you're going to get a wide spectrum in terms of this.
Fair enough. The last one that they commented on was seeing the fruit. So the guy asked, what would you think that I meant if I said to someone that I'm not seeing the fruit? Now, the reaction of the people in this was weird to the point where they said, was this seeing someone's...
Someone's
dirty bits.
What?
was this seeing someone caught with their pants down or something?
Talk about that all the time at my church. Pants down.
Don't let them see your fruit.
What do people know about church at all? You know what I'm saying? Like, have you never even been?
There's a good chance the answer to that is no.
Yeah.
I mean, just based on all cultural, you know, surroundings that, I mean, I could at least, here's the deal. I've never attended a Muslim mosque. I've never gone for a service. But if you told me they used that phrase, I don't know that the first thing I would jump to would be pants down. I would be like, they got to be talking about something.
Put your fruit away.
Jeez.
No, yeah, that's true. There's just a little bit of a...
And this could be just for entertainment standard, and that's why they decided to use that one. But
it was like they asked a bunch of college kids, you know what I'm saying?
That's pretty much what it was, Mike.
Yeah, okay.
And the general consensus was, hey, put your fruit away. That's not supposed to be out. And obviously the Christian in the situation went to the explanation of the fruits of the Spirit, and that if we weren't seeing their fruit, we weren't seeing the Holy Spirit working through them, and seeing things actually change in their life. So those were the four Christian phrases that were gone through by this group of folks. Mike, you seem like you're generally confused or surprised by their lack of understanding of smallest bit.
To be honest with you, I'm just in a poor mood tonight, and I'm trying to argue with everything. I don't even have any logical points, you know?
I gave you a window to at least give some kind of statement. But
no, here's the deal. Like, these are lies, right? I don't even believe what I'm saying. I'm just arguing to argue. So I rescind. I respect all journalists. And I feel like if you don't know the Christian language that we're using all the time, look, you need to, your Christian friends aren't doing a very good job talking to you. And so we can work on both.
Hey, Bobby, I'm not seeing your fruit. Let me tell you what that is.
Yeah. It doesn't help that the fruit of the looms, you know what I'm saying? That
was actually called upon. Was it a fruit of the loom that they're not seeing?
Yeah.
It's all good. Whenever I hear somebody say, hey, man, you're just going through a season. It's like, yeah, winter,
actually, that
kind
of makes my eyebrows angry when people say going through a season.
Yeah.
I'm like, here's the deal. If you don't know what to say, just shut up.
Yeah,
you know
yeah.
What I'm saying? Just say, I don't know what to say right now. And people respect that. You know, you ever had this happen? Someone shows up and lays a really heavy thing on you. It's complicated. It seems like it's going to be a real hassle. There's not really a good choice. It's just like three bad choices to make. And you're like, look, dude, I'm not really sure what to say here. Let's just hang out for a minute because, I mean, I got nothing. Yeah. That's an honest response to a really bad question. And then other people are like, you know, God opens the door, shuts the window. This is a season. It's like, you know, why don't you shut up? You're not being helpful to me at all.
Yeah, it's season because everyone else in the world would normally respond with, I don't know what to do. Do you want to go grab a beer and talk it over? And for some reason, Christians aren't allowed to do that.
Christians like, beer.
Yeah.
God, sin. I have to give the heavy God answer. Like, I can speak on behalf of the Lord in this area. Yeah, like if your wisdom isn't, I'm going to shut up now, this seems like a God-sized problem, then you have no wisdom.
Yeah.
I love the Christian society that says that our answers to all problems need to be one of the following, which is the whole, you're going through a season, everything happens for a reason, God's got a plan kind of thing, right? God opens doors and closes windows and stuff like that. One of those answers is usually what it's come to. And it drives me absolutely nuts that we have lost the ability to just have a personal conversation where we say, yeah, that really sucks.
Yeah, that seems like some bad stuff, man.
It's like we have to be counselors in every situation when we're not called to be.
Here's the deal. Like, those are even bad metaphor descriptions of what God does. Like Revelation, he's actually knocking at the door. And in Acts, people are falling out of windows. So I feel like, you know, you got to be careful with what you're trying to lay at God's feet. And what kind of box have you put him in that he's doing maintenance in your American house with your windows and your doors and stuff? Like, this very small critique of, you know, hey, God picks up villages and moves them across the way. That seems like something.
And actually,
about
is that supposed to be a comparison that is helpful? Like, God used to have, Lord, I used to have a big giant opening known as a door, and you, like, cracked a small window open. Well, I mean, that doesn't seem very generous.
I don't know how this is going to bring joy into my life. I had a big wide opening to go through easily, and then you cracked a very small window that lets barely any light in. That doesn't seem like a very good metaphor at all.
He comes off more as like a pernicious joker that lives in your place,
yeah,
constantly like moving your windows around and locking things.
A slightly benevolent kidnapper.
He moved, God moves around your furniture sometimes, you know? It's just then he opens a door, and then he shuts your window, and you have to worry about that.
Yeah,
it's
go like, in the cellar. I'll crack the window.
Yeah, we should just say, hey, you ran into the wall because you weren't going. Like, Jesus didn't run into the wall. He went through them. You ran smack into it because you weren't following Jesus. That's what happened in your life.
You should have been holding his hand. You could have had the walk through the walls power if you would have been holding his hands.
You should have lifted up holy hands. You would have gone, gone right through the ceiling.
Do you guys ever see the there's generally some Johnny do wrong in somebody's life, and then the Christian walks in and says you just got to forgive and forget that person. And you have to forgive everything they're doing and forget everything they're doing. And then you have to walk back and pretend like nothing ever happened and then be used again. I see that constantly on social media.
These are terrible advice.
Yeah, that's a ridiculous advice.
Yeah, just forgive and forget what's happened. It's like, wait, what? No, Jesus never says the forget part. Yeah, forgive. Agreed. We're all on the same page with that. But forget and then just get used every 10 seconds? That does not sound anything like something Jesus would say.
No, yeah, Christians, we're not called to be dumb or stupid, right? Like, the truth is like that your forgiveness may also be accompanied with mourning because your reality has changed, mm-hmm. right? Like, when you remember what has happened, there are consequences to those things. You mourn those consequences because it may not be the reality that you wanted, but you are still going to have to live in a new reality. So you mourn those, and then you live in that reality. That's the transition. You're not called to be blind to it and act like nothing ever happened and that there isn't a new reality, because frankly, that's just a denial of the world that the Lord created. Mm-hmm. And frankly, the natural consequences he warned you about with people sinning. So, that doesn't make any sense.
That is kind of funny, actually, because the Christian general reaction to like a heavy sin or when sin is happening, they act surprised and angered. It's like, look, you got to let that go. You don't got to let this thing. And really, it should be like, yeah, you know what? That happens. Like, if you believe in the presence of a holy God and the Holy Spirit and Jesus, then you have to also believe in the presence of sin. So when it shows up and affects people poorly, like, I guess I don't understand where all this anger is coming from, or this shock and whatever. Like, when you see some sin going down, basically you can look at someone's life and go, look, I mourn for you. You committed a sin. There's people that are affected by the way that you're living your life and the sin that you're purveying, and I feel bad for those people, but I feel just as bad for you. You're enchained to this sin and then purveying it to others. Like, I don't see the heavy hand on either one. If you can see God correctly, then I think you'll see sin correctly and the way that it affects people. Not that they have no culpability in it, but it's a wicked beast once it grabs onto you, and it's a hard thing to shake. So it's just as sad watching the guy that's stuck in sin as watching the fallout of the people it's affecting.
Thank you.
Yeah, we don't just sweep it under the rug like it never happened. I mean, you're sitting there, you're with your wife, and you're watching Game of Thrones or something, or watching the Deadpool movie, and then it occurs to you, hey, wait a minute, these boobies are a problem for me. And you let your wife know, hey, it seems like these boobies are a problem for me, I better not be watching this anymore. She says, okay, I understand where you're coming from, and, you know, I forgive you for what's going on. And then just forget about it so that you guys all watch the next episode again. No, you stop. You take action.
Yeah.
And, you know, if you're the one standing next to your brother involved in it, it means that there is, to some extent, a change in your life as well. You don't just suddenly, hey, I'm not involved in this, you know, whatever. No, your life changes. And so, you know, you forgive. And now we've got to adjust. It's forgive and adjust. It's not forgive and forget like that. So,
hey, man.
What?
God and I had a moment because of that movie yesterday.
Okay.
Seriously.
Does it involve boobies?
Yeah.
Okay.
It did, and I was not happy, because I really wanted to enjoy that movie. And then within 10, 15 minutes into this movie, there's like a really gratuitous sex scene that lasts like a minute and a half. And I'm just like, really? Like, I suppose I was told that I should expect this, but at the same point in time, I thought, all right, God, we can make it through this. It's all good. Mm-hmm. I'm going to see this and go, oh, well, that's the world, and then just walk away from it and all the good stuff. Man, I wanted to walk out. Like, I was astonished. I didn't. And I'm working on that, because I'm trying to figure out why I didn't. But I kind of had a God moment on that. I'm just like, man, like, is this what it's like to watch these kind of movies and then really actually get generally disgusted Because like a year ago, I would watch that and went, heck yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, man. This is good stuff.
It's a freebie.
Hey, yeah, exactly. Oh, God, I didn't go and watch porn on the internet or anything. God, I just went to a movie theater. That's all I did.
I just paid money for it and watched it on a big screen.
Right.
With a lot of other strangers.
I watched it on a screen 900 times the size is normal.
With a bunch of other dudes.
Yeah, with a bunch of other dudes and ladies, and it's okay. And I'm just like, wait, that's weird. Like, I just thought to myself, man, that's disgusting. And I even looked away and, like, I felt weird about that, but in, like, a good way. I was just like, hey, wait, why am I looking away? That's just a normal situation, but I was like, yeah.
Yeah.
Thanks, God.
And
I appreciate
that. And
then
I found some popcorn on the floor. I'm like, yeah. Double win.
Bubba Bubba. Yeah.
God opens somebody a window a indeed.
Window to some popcorn. Looks like my brother got some Snickers. He isn't noticing. He's paying attention to the boobies.
Snickers for me.
Snickers for me. So, yeah, don't go and see it. Like, I wanted it to be a good movie, but there's, like, some really raunchy stuff in there that you should expect from all the reviews, but at the same point in time, it's, like, it's not real until you're, like, in that theater watching it. So, yeah.
Okay.
I want you to be able to go watch it, but until they, release
VidAngel usually cleans up that sort of thing. It's an online streaming service.
Hey!
You can click for, hey, no nudity or no violence or no swearing, in which case, for Deadpool, that'd be nothing left.
I was going to say, you're going to see the opening credits.
You can click your criteria. So if your problem is a lot of bloodshed, then you can remove that. Or if your problem is swearing, you can remove that. You can itemize. So for guys in the room, you click the nudity button and it'll filter all that out. And boom.
Sweet. Yeah. Thanks, man.
Mm-hmm. I could probably roll that way.
VidAngel.
It's vidangel.com. Please visit vidangel.com today. We live from the path to support that. And for every click, we get 5 cents. Vidangel.com.
Hey, man, that's not actually true.
No.
Shoot. No, it's not. Yeah.
We should make that happen.
Can't I just speak things into existence? I got to start watching different guys on Sunday morning. That's my bad. I thought I could just kind of...
Did you watch The Secret?
I thought I could just kind of say this thing and then it would manifest.
Metaphysics?
Yeah, then you were calling that into existence. Kind of weak.
Dang.
I really wish I had sent this article to you. I read an article earlier this week about the history of the prosperity gospel. And it was pretty solid. Like, it was written from a gal who has, like, terminal cancer.
The history solid or the prosperity gospel?
The article was good. Okay. The article about it was good. No, basically, she ended up. I mean, she had done a bunch of research into it and seen all this stuff, and she has terminal cancer, and I'll bring it in next week. We'll read it next week. It was a really good perspective on the prosperity gospel. So.
Okay, cool.
All right, very good. Mike, people could use some help. What you got over there?
Yeah, I could do at least one. Here we go. Oh man, I tell you what, tough days. Live from the path.
Mike empathizes on
Dear
Life
from the
Path.
I've been working for 4 years. I need to work to help my husband financially. However, over the last few months, I felt torn about not being a stay-at-home mom. My grandma, who is in her 70s, has been taking care of my son full-time while I work, but her health isn't the greatest now. I don't trust any of the daycare in my area, and I can't afford anyone anyway. I really want to be a stay-at-home mom, but still feel obligated to help bring in money. How do I get over my guilt for not wanting to work outside the home full time? Stuck. Yeah, here's how you do it. Look at your kid in the eye. Then quit. And then just stay at home. That's it. Those are the answers.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose whatever feelings are drawing you to want to stay home, I'm sure prescribe as to why it's the right thing to do.
Here's the crap of it, okay? These conversations irritate me to a certain extent because people that ask me these money-related questions actually never considered what they weren't willing to give up. You know what I'm saying? Like, I want to be a stay-at-home mom, but we need money. I say, why? Where do you live? Well, we live at this house, or blah, 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 blah. I say, why don't you sell that house and buy a house you can afford? Well, a bunch of junk. I think we keep this house. I say, how many cell phones you got? Two. What is your cell phone bill? It's like $250. Well, look, man, why don't you get yourself a flip phone? And you and your husband can share text messages 20 a week, and your cell phone bill will be $15. Well, you know, I don't know. We'll do that. Blah, blah, blah. Here's the thing. It ain't that important to you. You're not willing to trade anything for it. It ain't worth anything to you. Okay? As far as I'm concerned, like, if my wife is a stay-at-home mom, and I would trade just about anything to make sure that stays that way. Like, I mean, just short of God's hand moving in and saying, look, this woman's going to work. And I say, yes, Lord. But apart from that, if I have any control over it, we will move. We will downsize our house. We will get rid of cable. We don't even have cable, but I'll find something to sell. You know what I'm saying? Like, I will make a ton of moves to make sure that happens because it's that important to me that she gets the ability to stay home with our kids when the time comes.
Yeah.
And so, like, really what you haven't listed is all the things that are keeping you from doing this. And most of it, I'm guessing, is your lifestyle. So, look, just make a simple choice, man. You know, make a big move if you need to, but just give up some things and stay at home with your kids.
Right, right. It's just setting the priorities, right? It's that gamification thing we were talking earlier. Like, what are you willing to have stuff cost? And, like, either you're willing to pay the cost or you're not. It really isn't all that difficult. You just have to decide what you're willing to pay.
They did a study. I was listening to a sermon one guy said. They did a study on where the, you know, a good majority of stay-at-home moms, their second income ends up being a wash. Like, by the time you put in gas money, the going out to eat, extra cell phone bill, any wear and tear on the vehicle, taxes, it's a wash. You end up making, like, you know, an extra $1,000 a year. Can you skim $1,000 out of somewhere for your wife to stay home with your kids? I think you can. I think it's doable. So,
yeah.
I wouldn't sweat it. Just make some decisions.
Yeah, do it if you want to do it. Don't do it if you don't want to do it. But there's no reason to hem-haw around it.
Yeah, just don't act like your hands are tied. They're not. Let's see. Anybody else got anything to say about that?
No, we're with you.
Okay.
Just do it.
Just become an author or sell things on Pinterest or something.
Yeah. So Carson's advocating an income from home project.
Thanks, Andrew.
You're welcome. Do Pinterest.
Do Pinterest. How to make big money on the internet.
Can you sell stuff off Pinterest?
Can you make money on Pinterest?
I think you can do that on Etsy, can't you?
Yeah, I suppose you put your stuff onto Pinterest so people are interested in it, and then they click on it and go to the Etsy and buy it.
So create an online business and have your Pinterest flow to that.
Yeah.
Here's what you could do. You could go and thrift shop all the time, and then you could find a bunch of purses, and you could sell those purses after renovating or, like, refurbishing them.
Yeah, purse refurbisher.
Purse refurbisher.
That's big money.
You could buy them at, like, an outlet.
And sell them on eBay?
And sell them on eBay.
Hmm. Yeah.
For money.
Hey, man, I had some really rough experiences on eBay. Thank you.
Thanks, Jim.
You want to talk about it?
Maybe you and Andrew could have your own show.
No, I don't really want to talk about
called
it.
Dear Live from the
thanks
eBay.
For nothing. Here we go. Secular advice is, you are not the only mother who feels this kind of ambivalence. Many others are as torn as you are. Isn't ambivalence, I don't care either way?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. She's not said that right.
That don't sound right.
No.
Perhaps it would help you if you focus harder on thinking about this rationally rather than emotionally. When your grandmama's health no longer allows her to care for your son, you may have to cut back on your schedule to be with him. Or your husband may need to take a second job. Also, some people manage to work from home, and you may want to explore these opportunities. For heaven's sakes, man, will you get to the point of the deal? Let's drive me to know your husband got a second job. Maybe he does have to have a job, but maybe you could live less extravagantly. You know what I'm saying? Maybe, I mean, whatever your situation is, just downsize it a little bit.
Right.
Give something up. We don't ever want to do that. We always want to, we're like, we got to add to make up more money. Well, why don't you get rid of some stuff? Why don't you lose some things? Your life gets better. The less crap you got hanging around your place, the less worries you got. More money, more problems. Right on, Booba?
That sounds un-American.
Right on.
Yeah, I tell you what. I'm moving to China where I can get ranked appropriately. What happens when I put...
Dude, you're gonna have a Sesame score of like 9.
I'll put middle-of-the-road stuff, like a picture of dog poo or something. What do they do? I mean, is that a pro or a yes?
You could argue for both. It's like, hey, that's unclean. No, it's fertilizer.
Yeah, it's fertilizer.
Wouldn't you know how to game the system, though? Like, like every once in a while, you just throw a picture of the chairman with a heart on him for him or something.
Yeah.
Be like, 10-point boost.
I heart communism.
I can be friends with a bunch of weird nationalists. But then, you know, as long as I retweet what the Communist Party put out that day, I should be good.
It's like, Mike's score hasn't moved up or down in 15 years.
I'm dead medium. It's nothing but dog poop and Chairman Mao. Here we go. Dear Life from, this is the last one. Here we go. Dear Life from the past.
Wait, was that the advice?
Yeah.
There was not like another paragraph or anything?
No, that was it.
No, it was just here's some options on changing your lifestyle.
Did Secular actually say grandmama, or was that you who said that?
I don't think it's any of your business. Dear Life from the Path, my son is more than likely going to win a trip to the Dominican Republic through his employer. He's planning to take his wife with him. Their two children will stay with me or with their other grandma. Mm-hmm. With the way the world is now, I wouldn't go on a vacation with my husband, fly to another country, and leave my children behind. I would let him go alone so that in case something happens, my kids would have at least one parent left. I understand that we should not give in to fear and give up what we like to do, but that doesn't mean we shouldn't take logical precautions. My children would be more important to me than a vacation. What's your opinion on this?
Do you ever go to the store together?
Yeah.
Have you ever attended anything at the same place?
You're an incredibly morbid person. Yeah.
Have you ever ridden in a vehicle together?
I'm never going to go anywhere with my husband for the chance of my children becoming orphans.
I mean, I get the thought process, but like you don't actually practically believe that. Because otherwise, yes, you would never ride in a car together. You would never go to the store together. I don't know how the heck you got married in the same chapel. So, like you would never be in the same area.
Everybody plane could crash into this building.
That's it. It'd take out everybody that could ever raise
just
the children.
Webcast it.
Get out of the delivery room, Bruce.
Yeah. Wow. Indeed. Yeah, I mean, you'd literally have to sit in a dark room with a knife in your hand doing a windmill, like, to be constantly protected.
Yeah, there's a tornado coming. Go to the neighbors. Increase our chances.
Let's split out panic room.
Here's our advice.
Separate panic rooms.
Here's our advice. Either you, like Ben said, don't practically believe that, or you do, and you are missing out on a lot of joy in life.
Yeah, no doubt. Secular's advice is, my opinion is that you should stay out of it. And let your son,
yay, secular.
And let your son and daughter-in-law enjoy the hard-earned vacation.
Bam.
If they were visiting a country where the threat level was high, I might think differently. However, to repeat what you said in your letter, we should not give in to fear and give up what we like to do because we are afraid of what might happen. That's not living. It's hiding.
Hey, man, I like people. Hey, we shouldn't do this, but we shouldn't give in to fear, but I want to.
Sure does seem convenient.
Can you affirm that in me? I know the right thing. I believe the wrong thing.
I've even
what are your
said
thoughts?
The right thing.
Here we go. We got to do this one more.
Okay, go ahead.
Dear Life on the Path, I love attending religious services on Sundays and the communion during them. I quit drinking alcohol almost 18 months ago. Our church serves wine, not grape juice, during communion, and I have been told not to drink anything alcoholic. How do I cope with this situation? Sweet Moses, man.
Seriously? Is this real? Mike, you didn't just make that up, did
no.
you?
No. From sober and proud of it. I mean, good Lord, friend. Put some thoughts together. Bring your own juice with you. Or, I don't care, take it down the gully. Right. You know what I'm saying?
Here's the thing. A lot of these churches will also offer non-alcoholic alternatives.
Not this one. His parents at Irish Catholic Church. Right. Booze or nothing. The Lord does not sanctify
you. Get straight whiskey.
Jesus blood is fermented or not at all.
Here's the thing. That it's like, I have Crohn's disease, and I'm severely allergic to gluten. Huh? I still eat the crackers during communion. Yes, it hurts later, but I mean, I refuse to not remember.
Andrew, you take on the seriousness of this situation. Like, you really take on the seriousness.
It's like, let's talk about gluten.
It's less than an ounce of alcohol. It's like, not the whole thing isn't entirely alcohol. You're
right.
Fine.
But you're talking about a health problem. They're talking about an addiction.
I mean, here's the deal. I don't understand this logic. You have to have an odd perspective of God. Do you think he's going to rock you on a technicality that at 9 a.m. you didn't down a 1/8 ounce of red communion wine? Do you know what I'm saying? Like, you can participate in communion without the plastic cup and whatever they're choosing to serve that day.
Here's the deal. If I saw somebody who had to break out a half gallon of Welch's every Sunday morning to do their communion, I would totally bring another half gallon of Welch's just to do it with them. So they didn't feel so weird about it. Just be like, here, Lydia, here's the deal. This is our communion. Let's do this. Grape juice. That's what
I do.
This
would be akin to a guy saying, look, we're going to take communion, but Mike, it's going to be in a room full of naked ladies. What do you do? Well, I feel like I'll get my own communion somewhere. And that's the end of that discussion.
Jesus does call out the communion thing pretty heavily. I guess I have to be in that room of naked ladies.
I got no choice but to watch the Deadpool movie and take communion. Sorry, Lord.
You know, is it wrong that there's a part of me that's with Andrew that says, I get your alcoholism, but can't you just take that? Is that big of a deal?
Well,
for alcoholics, kind of.
Yeah, absolutely, man.
I mean, even just the smell of it can trigger.
All right.
I've been dealing with, you guys know my deal. I've been dealing with fast food for a long time. If someone handed me like a quarter of a double cheeseburger and said, hey, man, this is your communion this week, it may not be a whole lot. It may be communion, but that would still set me off.
Okay.
And for an alcoholic, it's like they take communion before the service. The next 20 minutes until they're out in the parking lot and literally at the alcohol store, that's the entirety of where their mind is. You could be preaching the world's greatest sermon, and their mind is entirely on, all right, where's that next drink coming from? Because it's just part of the way that their brain processes things. It's expecting that kind of high, and it's craving it.
Your brain will start releasing chemicals that make you happy before you even get up to that cup.
Mm-hmm. All right, so get some juice.
Yeah, just bring some. I mean, flask
grape juice.
Put some grape juice in a flask if you want to do this thing MacGyver style.
That would look really bad.
Pour out the wine for the homies and throw a little grape juice in there, and then down it goes.
For a known alcoholic walking into church with a flask in hand and saying, oh, it's just communion.
Don't judge me based on what I look like, Booba. I'm trying to stay away from the booze.
I'm trying to care about you. If I walked in with a McDonald's bag and all I had was communion crackers in there, you'd call me out.
Well, I'm just saying it's a little bit less noticeable than a half gallon of Welch's. What's in there? None of your business.
I got the struggles.
Yeah.
Let me pour out the wine for the homies.
Tied up on your job, homie.
All right, here's Secular's advice. Congratulations on your sobriety. This is something to discuss with your clergy person. If you have been warned that tasting the communion wine would sabotage your sobriety, perhaps you should consider partaking only of the bread. Now, here's the deal. I think you've got to bring your own drink with you. I'm not sure. I'm not one for religious stickiness, but I feel like it's a symbol, and I think you got to have some kind of liquid there.
Yeah, no, I agree.
Just bring some bread. Jesus called down separate.
Yeah,
do it.
All right. Hey, you've been listening to Live from the Path. Thanks for having with us this week. You can find more clips from the show at livefromthepath.org or shoot us an email, info@livefromthepath.org, and we'd be like, we might read that stuff. And that's all we got going on. We will see you next week. In the meantime, be faithful in means. God will handle the ends. You've been listening to Live from the Path.